Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our fall membership drive. More about that in just a sec. Today we're talking about bourbon, how it's made, and what makes it good. Tim Barra has taught biology, human anatomy, ecology, evolution, marine biology, and ichthyology. It is the study of fish, to college students for decades. He's written many books and joined the show to talk about some of them in the past. The topic may not be in his academic wheelhouse per se, but bourbon goes way back with Tim Barra. He's written a new book on the topic titled Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Welcome back to the show, Tim Barra.
Well, it's good to be here. I never thought I'd be here with a book about bourbon.
I never did either.
Last visit with Charles Darwin and his children
and
brought me here.
And then I think before that was Charles Darwin.
Yes, one thing led to another, but how I got to bourbon is totally different.
And I want to talk about that, but first I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and that it is our fall membership drive. We count on listeners for the most important part of our budget. We rely on listener support to bring you great programs every day, so please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. For a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, we'll send you the book, Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. It's written by Tim Barra. He's an Ohio State Professor Emeritus, my guest today. This book is a thorough summary of bourbon facts. It's a great reference volume. It's the perfect guide to the history and science behind this favorite drink. And as a true academician, Tim Barra has included a very detailed index. The book is an authoritative guidebook on all things bourbon, written in a straightforward, easy-to-understand format, which we're going to talk about. It answers the question, what is bourbon? And it has a helpful glossary of terms with beautiful full-color photos, hundreds to accompany them. This book is your thank you gift today for $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You'll be supporting public radio and get a great book in return as our way of saying thank you for your gift. Your gift to 89.7 NPR News right now supports the conversations you'll hear on All Sides in the months to come. We talk about local issues and we talk about global issues with a local perspective. I think bourbon is probably a good example of that. All Sides is a show you are not going to find anywhere else on the radio. Only on 89.7 NPR News. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. I think this book would make a great gift along with a bottle of someone's favorite bourbon for the holidays. Something to think about there. And kind of the killing two birds one with one stone tactic, you're supporting your local radio station. 866-897-9678. All right, Tim Barra, all bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon. Why?
Well, because of the definition of whiskey, things like Scotch, Irish, Canadian, Japanese, bourbon, rye, all fit that definition. But the definition of bourbon is of a subcategory of whiskey that has certain parameters. To be called bourbon, first of all, it has to be made in the United States. You cannot make bourbon anywhere else.
Why is that?
Well, the Congress in 1964 passed that rule. I mean, it's the same thing for Scotch. You can only make Scotch in Scotland. It's one of these geographical definitions, like champagne. Mm-hmm. You can't call sparkling wine from California champagne. It has to be made in Champagne region of France. Bourbon has carved out that identity for itself. Must be made in the United States. It's a myth that people say to me often, oh, it's not made in Kentucky, therefore it isn't bourbon. Mm-hmm. That isn't true. Although 95% of all bourbon is made in Kentucky, you can make it anywhere in the United States. Wyoming bourbon is terrific stuff. You know, make it anywhere. It has to be aged in new charred oak containers. So you can only use them once. Well, what happens to them after you've dumped out the bourbon? Interestingly, they're sold to Scotland, and Scotch is aged in bourbon barrels. So I tell my Scotch-drinking friends, that's why it's so good. There's a couple gallons of bourbon embedded in the wood. So when they fill it with Scotch in Scotland, that moves in and out. The bourbon moves in and out of the liquid in there for years and flavors the Scotch. Other features of bourbon are... you can't add anything except water. No color, no flavor, no nothing. When you are distilling it, you can go no higher than 160 proof. You stop it at that point. Now, vodka, which is one of the most popular drinks there is, and it's a big nothing. Vodka is distilled to 190 proof, which means there's no color, no flavor, no taste, no aroma, no nothing. People who argue about the different brands of vodka, that this $50 Grey Goose is better than the $10 pair, well, they're all just drinking ethanol, you know, neutral spirits. So you stop bourbon distillation at 160. You then put it into the barrel at no more than 125 proof. So you have to dilute it from the still with distilled water, put it in the barrel at less, or 125 proof or less. And then when you bottle it, it can be bottled at no less than 80 proof. So those rules determine what can be called bourbon.
Why so many rules? Who cares?
Well, it's truth in advertising, because right after Prohibition, there were all kinds of weird whiskeys showing up. People would take vodka or neutral spirits and add coloring, add creosote, add iodine, and sell it as whiskey. You know, and this eventually led to consumer legislation to have truth in advertising. So bourbon was the first real product that brought us consumer legislation.
You're listening to 89.7 NPR News Fall Membership Drive. Tim Bera is my guest this hour. He is a professor emeritus at Ohio State. He's an executive bourbon steward, and he's here talking about our thank you gift this hour, his book, Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. This book is the recommended text for Bourbon 101. Bourbon is a drink that is prized throughout the world, but it is distinctly American with deep Kentucky roots. This thank you gift is an extension of the conversation we're having today. If you enjoy listening to All Sides, and if you especially love when we have on local authors, then now is a great time to call and make a gift of support. For $15 a month as a sustainer, you can get the book, Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. In this book, you will learn the history of bourbon. You'll go behind the scenes of the bourbon making process. The book teaches you how to read a whiskey label, which I'm really interested in, and it goes into detail about the fermentation and distillation process. Is Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey bourbon? The answer is yes and no, and that explanation is in this book. Make a gift now for $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 and get this great book. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. If you listen to All Sides every day, then you know the show is committed to producing in-depth, focused conversation on issues important to Columbus and Central Ohio. You hear from our weekly reporter roundtable every Monday. You hear straight from newsmakers from all sides of the aisle all week long. If having a locally focused talk show is important to you, then now is the time to make a gift and support the station. You can get this great book about bourbon as a thank you gift in return. It would make a great gift for somebody you know who loves bourbon. But remember that your gift becomes the conversations All Sides has in the future. So give now and get Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know, as your thank you gift for $15 a month at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Once again, my guest is Tim Bera. He's an Ohio State professor emeritus of biology and has taught many, many different kinds of offshoots of biology to college students. He's also a prolific author. His newest book is titled Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. You were talking about the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906, and it is shocking what forced government officials to step in. Now, is there any fears?
Well, you do have to read labels carefully and understand them. Everything is defined so that there is enforcement of this. You're not going to be buying really rubbish stuff that has the word bourbon on the label. Mm-hmm. One of the most important parts of the definition is that it has to be from a mash bill or grain recipe of a minimum of 51% corn.
The mash bill is another phrase for the grain recipe.
Recipe, okay. Yes. And there's a great variety of that in real bourbons, and it really just depends on the distiller. One isn't necessarily better than the other. You decide what you like personally. Most bourbons are somewhere in the realm of about 70% corn. And then there is a secondary grain. Now, that is usually rye, say 20% rye, and then 10% barley. And the barley is used for the enzymes that break down the starches into the sugars and so forth so the yeast can digest it. But you can also substitute wheat for the rye.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a wheated bourbon or a rye bourbon. And you can manipulate these numbers a few percent to give the flavor profile that the distiller wants.
So there's rye, there's wheat, and there's also barley.
Mm-hmm.
There is no oatmeal.
Well, there are some craft distillers that are making bourbon partially with oat grain. So grain is the essential thing, and oat is a grain.
What's the difference, let's say, between rye and wheat? When you talk about that flavor profile, mm-hmm. What can we make of that?
Well, rye tends to be sharper, more peppery, more spicy, whereas a wheated bourbon, wheat is not so overwhelming, and it allows more of the corn sweetness to show through and tends to be sort of a softer, sweeter taste. Some people like one, some people like the other.
Kind of like
them
bread,
both,
right?
Depending on, yeah, like bread. In
sometimes I feel like some rye.
That's right.
And sometimes I feel like wheat. Yeah.
It depends on the mood and the occasion, and, you know, they're all good.
And then barley.
Barley is necessary because it has special enzymes that when it is malted, which means it's allowed to germinate, then you stop the germination. Those enzymes are ready. When you put that in the recipe, in the mash bill, and cook it, those enzymes start breaking down the starches of the corn and the rye into more simple sugars, which can then be digested by the yeast, and that's where the alcohol comes from.
Yay, yes.
A
lot of people associate bourbon with Kentucky, as you said. Mm-hmm. Why is it that it got such a strong, has such a strong history in Kentucky?
Well, Kentucky is the perfect place for making bourbon. It has a wonderful water supply throughout the whole state because of the limestone layer under Kentucky.
So it's the water.
It's one of the reasons.
Okay.
The water is filtered through this limestone, which removes iron. Iron is the enemy of bourbon. So it has great water. And when Kentucky was first settled, its soil was so incredibly fertile and people were growing corn. Well, you have to do something with this corn. Now, you can ship it out in bushels, which are heavy and so forth, but distillation is a way of converting those bushels of corn into a more easily transported liquid, and that became part of farming. Distillation was part of all farmers' activity, like making candles or making soap or something. So that was an easier way that was to transport, which was even more valuable. Kentucky passed a law to get itself settled, the Karn and Cabin Act, which gave 400 acres to anyone moving, say, from Pennsylvania or Maryland, where they made rye, move into Kentucky. We'll give you 400 acres if you plant corn and build a cabin. And that led to this. And, you know, one distiller sort of begat another, and Kentucky is full of distillers, some really large and some small craft. But about 95% of all bourbon is made in Kentucky. But it can be made anywhere in the United States.
How did Prohibition change the trajectory of bourbon as a consumable?
Oh, well, it almost destroyed it. I mean, it wiped it out virtually for 13 years. However, there were six distillers that got medicinal whiskey permits. So they were allowed to make it for medicinal
consumption. Are they the ones we're very familiar with today,
well,
by coincidence? Or?
Through various iterations, they've come and gone and been bought and sold. But okay. Yes, they are still around in some format today. And that allowed bourbon to survive. And of course, you had to have a physician's prescription to get your little bottle of bourbon in that time. And that brought on many, many illnesses because people wanted that prescription. And bourbon survived because of that. It turned something like Walgreens drugstores into de facto liquor stores. I mean, I think Walgreens owned about 11 drugstores in Chicago when Prohibition started, and he owned over 500 when it ended.
Wow.
So he could sell the liquor. You know, it was a really historic time in America.
It also almost wiped out the beer business.
Oh,
only
everything.
The big beer makers survived.
Yeah.
How big is bourbon outside of the United States? Is it coveted?
Yes, and more so all of the time. Now, Scotch is the biggest selling whiskey. About twice as much Scotch by volume is sold as bourbon. But to the bourbon, you can add the Canadian and the other forms of whiskey. Scotch is still the biggest of all of the kinds of whiskey available. But bourbon is on the ascendancy, and there's a real interest in craft bourbons these days, where small distilleries set about making things. And in fact, we have one right here in Columbus, downtown near
Midwest?
Fifth and High, Midwest Spirits.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrific place,
right.
And they make an excellent bourbon. And it's very small. If you take a tour, you'll see all this gleaming, beautiful copper work and so forth. Well, places like that are springing up all over America, turning out their own unique kinds of bourbon.
You're listening. This is listener supported, I should say, 89.7 NPR News, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. During this show, every day you hear conversations with interesting people, and those conversations are in-depth. Many times we talk to a guest for an entire hour, just like I am with Tim Barra, Ohio State professor emeritus and author of many books, his newest titled Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. You can only find that on public radio. Support the station you depend on at WOSU.org. Call 866-897-9678. I want to say thanks to Cynthia Holder and Mark Rich from Edison for your pledge of support. Thanks. Let's see if we can get some more in just the next 5 minutes. While I'm talking, let's stop for just a minute and think about what you value, what you listen to, where you turn your ears to every day. Maybe your eyes. Maybe you're listening online. If this is important to you, if you listen to All Sides every day, if you depend on WOSU or 89.7 NPR News to bring you the news of the day and bring you analysis of that news, then now's the time to show us that it matters. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. I chose this book for the fund drive. We know that bourbon is a big deal. It's an increasingly big deal. Everybody knows a bourbon lover. Contribute $15 a month as a sustainer and get the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. It's your quick study guide to everything you need to know about bourbon. If you have a bourbon drinker in your life, why not get this book and a public radio membership for them as a gift? Again, that is $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org. Or call 866-897-9678. As I expected, knowing Tim Barra's meticulous approach to his books, it has an extensive glossary of terms, and it explains which types of whiskey are bourbon, which are not allowed to be called bourbon, and why. The book also includes detailed notes and explanations that help put pictures and quotes from the book into context. It's an essential tool for the novice bourbon drinker and for the studied expert. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And remember, no matter what amount you give, you're supporting the news and information on 89.7 NPR News. There is power behind your gift to the station. Your gift is combined with thousands of other gifts, and all those gifts together make a powerful voice. Thanks to Suzanne Kazar from Worthington for your pledge of support. Your gift will be combined with thousands of other gifts, Suzanne, And all those gifts make that powerful voice. We are listener-supported public radio. You are the power behind public radio. Give now. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Our thank you gift this hour is the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. And you can get your very own copy when you give $15 a month as a sustainer or make a one-time gift of $180. Pick up the phone or go online right now. Do that. Just take 2 minutes out of your time. There are local volunteers waiting to take your calls. The number's 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Again, my guest is Tim Barra, an Ohio State professor emeritus, and his new book is titled Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Let's talk about that label on bourbon and whiskey. I mean, or I should say whiskey in general, where it identifies it as bourbon. What can somebody who's not educated get from that label?
Well, there's some interesting nuances to looking at these labels. For example, a lot of people have the misconception, they'll say, oh, bourbon must be aged X number of years to be called bourbon. That isn't correct. 2 minutes in a new charred oak vessel makes it bourbon. However, what they're thinking about is the term straight bourbon. That does have an age requirement. So you're better off looking for a label on the bottle that says straight bourbon. Now, it might say Kentucky straight bourbon or Virginia straight bourbon or whatever the state it was distilled in, but straight is the term. Now, to be called straight bourbon, it must be aged a minimum of 2 years in the new charred oak. If it's aged more than 4 years or more, you do not have to put an age date on there. So if it says straight bourbon and there's no age date, you know it's at least 4 years old. But if it's 2 or 3 years old, it will say age 2 years or age 36 months. So that tells you something right there.
Does you were talking about Kentucky as one of the reasons why it's so well known is because of the water. And I was wondering about, does that handicap other places? I mean, how do people not in Kentucky? I mean, where do you get your water from?
Well, you have to do some water tests and chemistry before you locate a distillery. And if you can find, usually spring water is in the vicinity of limestone. So you hunt for that sort of things. But there are distilleries that simply use the city water from wherever they happen to be, because that is also treated and filtered and so forth, so it is removing the nasty that can get into it. So it's not essential that you be in Kentucky, but it is essential that you have pristine waters, whether it comes from the city's treatment plant or from a spring. It doesn't make that much difference.
There's the liquid of the spent mash. It's known as setback?
Yes, that's another good point to talk about. Bourbon is made by the sour mash process. 99% of all bourbons are sour mash. What that means is that after the mash bill has been distilled, a portion of that, maybe as much of a third, is taken out of the still and put back in the next batch that's cooking. That's why it's called a setback.
Yeah.
What that does is keep the pH more or less constant. It tends to be towards the acid side, and that's what the yeast want. That's creating the best possible environment and giving a consistent product from one distillation to the next, to the next, to the next. They keep putting the setback.
That's where the continuity comes from.
And that gives continuity, and that's the sour mash. Not all bourbons put that on their label, but almost all bourbons are made with a sour mash process. There are a few that use a sweet mash, and that means every bottling is different from every other. Every distillation is different from every other because it doesn't get that same yeast that the previous distillation used.
If you have a question about anything about bourbon, you can give us a call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. And Bob in Pataskala, you're on the air. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Ann. This is an absolutely fascinating show. My question is, Jack Daniels likes to call itself Tennessee whiskey, Tennessee sipping whiskey. Is it, in fact, a bourbon?
Well, that's a common question I get, and I address this in the book in a very straightforward way by saying yes and no. There is no reason Jack Daniels cannot be called a bourbon. It meets all of the requirements of bourbon. You know, it has the same kind of mash bill, as a new charred oak, all the things about bourbon are present for Jack Daniels. However, it is a marketing decision by Brown-Forman, who own the company, to call it a Tennessee whiskey. They want to set themselves apart from bourbon. Now, it is made in Tennessee, so they're creating a niche, Tennessee whiskey. But there's nothing about it that isn't bourbon. Now, what Jack Daniels will say is, oh, well, we use the Lincoln County process, therefore it's different. Lincoln County process is a charcoal filtration situation where they take what they have distilled before, they put it in the barrel and run it through a huge charcoal column, sort of like an aquarium filter. And the activated charcoal, which is maple wood, that has been burned into charcoal, it filters out various congeners that have escaped the distillation. That gives Jack Daniels this sort of smooth finish, and, you know, it's a bit sweeter than many bourbons. And so they want to say, well, we use the Lincoln County process, so we're calling ourselves Tennessee whiskey. The Lincoln County process does not invalidate the name bourbon, but it does more or less describe a Tennessee whiskey. But there are other bourbons that are also charcoal filtered and just don't make a big deal out of it.
Bob and Pataskala, thanks for that call and thanks for listening. Thanks to Shane Arnett from Westerville and Patricia Haggerty from Columbus for your pledges of support. We appreciate your support. It means a lot to us. We don't take it lightly any more than you take lightly what you spend your time listening to every day. We know you value good information, reliable information, accurate information, timely, relevant information. That's what we try to bring to you every day on 89.7 NPR News. And we only can do it because listeners support our work. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher right now. We're talking about bourbon today, the drink that is prized around the world, but distinctly American. Contribute $15 a month as a sustainer and get the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know, written by my guest today, Tim Barra. Your $15 a month gift can be withdrawn from your checking account or charged to your credit card. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. After reading this book, you'll be ready for a driving vacation on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Or just head over to Midwest Spirits and enjoy yourself there. Get this great book and support public radio. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Your gift to 89.7 NPR News today is essential to the future of this station. You know what's going on in Columbus thanks to the award-winning local news coverage from the WOSU News team. You hear in-depth, thoughtful discussion about our community on All Sides with Ann Fisher. And all of this essential local news, news you can trust, it's only on the radio thanks to listener contributions. Do your part. Become a member. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You will be investing in your future listening by giving right now. And our thank you gift this hour is the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Dr. Tim Barra has developed this guidebook in a straightforward, easy-to-understand format. He understands the question, what is bourbon, in a style both beginners and aficionados will appreciate. Get this great book now for $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180. Support the station you listen to every day. Support 89.7 NPR News. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thank you for your support. I promised at the beginning of the program that we'd talk about how you got into drinking bourbon.
Well,
you were quite young.
Yes. I was a little boy growing up in St. Louis, and my dad and my uncles, they were all bourbon drinkers. So my dad would teach me how to make a cocktail, you know, an old-fashioned or a whiskey sour or a highball. And so I just did it. Just something I grew up with. I was never a particularly big drinker of it, but I did like a highball from time to time. And nothing really happened for decades after that. But a trip to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, which I highly recommend for every listener who's interested in bourbon. You read my book and then go visit. Mm. And you can go to any of, 12, 14 distilleries, pick a couple, and take a long weekend in Kentucky. Make Bardstown your sort of center, your base, and each morning drive out in a different direction. You'll visit a different distillery and take these tours and do the tastings. It's amazing what you'll learn doing that, especially if you've read the book.
For a long time, though, the bourbon distilleries kind of operated quietly. It's just become sort of a thing now.
Yes, it has become very trendy, and these distilleries are now a destination. I mean, this is millions of dollars of tourism for Kentucky to these distilleries, and they're springing up everywhere. There are new ones coming up. But the big names like Jim Beam and Four Roses and Wild Turkey and Woodford Reserve and so forth, go to those and take the tour. There's nothing more interesting than being in a rickhouse surrounded by thousands of barrels of bourbon, and you breathe that in, this amazing aroma. It's known as the angel's share. That's the evaporation through the wood of the bourbon as it ages. So the angels are getting their drink. And it's just lovely. I mean, I love being in there and breathing in deeply.
And you could smell the differences.
Well, yes, you can
just smell. Like you can, when you
in different distilleries, if you get pretty adept at this, you may be able to recognize where you are. But it all has this general bourbon aroma, which is a wonderful scent.
Thanks to Chris Gauger from Powell for your pledge of support. Chris writes, listening to NPR has allowed me to learn something new every day. Chris Gauger, I can't agree more. That's kind of the way I live my life. Something new every day. I just ask a lot of questions and I learn a lot of new things. If you enjoy that, then make a call right now, 866-897-9678, or go to WOSU.org. You were talking earlier about, Midwest spirits and their beautiful gleaming copper. I guess they're the stills, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's a column and a pot. Mm-hmm. Those are two different kinds of stills.
Two
What's
kinds.
The diff?
Well, scotch, for example, has been made in pot stills for...
And what do those look like?
Well, they look like a gourd or a bottle, whereas most bourbon is distilled in column stills, which are very tall, thin structures. Some of them can be, 60 feet tall.
Oh.
Others are half that size. And there are little partitions all the way up. So you put the mash that has been cooked and fermented at the top, and you put steam at the bottom. Now, the mash trickles down through openings in plates at certain intervals. The steam is rising. That steam then is heating the mash and removing the alcohol because that boils at a lower temperature than water. So that goes up with the steam. It's then condensed. And then it's redistilled, usually in a pot still, or can be in a pot still, which takes out even more of the unpleasant congeners that are in the alcohol. That is what is called the white dog that you would then accumulate until you've got enough to put it in the barrels. And so you put it in the barrels and let it age in the rickhouse. And after it reaches the flavor profile that the master distiller wants, you bottle it. So if you take bourbon that, say, has aged in the barrels for 10 years, put it in a bottle, keep that bottle for 10 years, you do not have 20-year-old bourbon. It's only
when
it's
wine, for instance.
That works with wine, but not with bourbon. It only ages within the barrel because it's the barrel with that charred oak that's giving 100% of the color to bourbon, and maybe 75% of the flavor comes from the wood sugars that are part of the oak.
Is that color like the tannins from the wood?
Well, that's part of it, yes. But it's also because of the charring.
Okay.
You've blackened it. That kind of breaks up that surface that allows the alcohol to penetrate, so it moves in and out of the wood with the change in temperature in the rickhouse. Now, if it's stored at the top of a 9-story rickhouse, the temperature up there may be 38 degrees higher than at the bottom of the rickhouse. So distillers keep track of how their barrels are aging, and they tend to mix barrels from high, low, middle, center, east side, west side to get the flavor they want. But they can also notice that, gee, these barrels on the fifth level on the east wall, they have a special property. We're going to bottle those barrels as a small batch or as a single barrel bourbon. And they'll charge more for that because they have something magical happens in this layer, you know, or in this area. And that's part of the art of making bourbon.
Why can't they reuse barrels?
Well, legally, it can only be used once. So it's written into the law. This came about as a way of increasing jobs for making barrels. Use them once, you have to get rid of them, so you have to make more. This was an economic thing from the Great Depression and so forth to stimulate jobs, because Prohibition killed so many jobs, not just the tavern industry, but the bottling industry, the distillers, the coopers, and so forth. So let's make people use new barrels. And that first usage of the barrel gives you the best, most flavorful, the most powerful.
But the Scotch makers in Scotland like to use the barrels.
They use them because they don't want that strong oak, woody flavor.
They want it to be used.
They want it to be a used barrel because bourbon has already sort of cured it, so to speak. And think of the difference in Scotland and Kentucky's climate. Kentucky's very hot and humid and has a real summer and winter and so forth. Scotland is kind of drizzly and cool much of the time of the whole year. So many scotches are aged much longer than bourbon because a year in a Scottish rickhouse isn't nearly the same as a year in a bourbon rickhouse. Plus, it's an already used barrel. So they do it differently. An 18-year-old scotch, if you put that in a new charred oak barrel, it might be undrinkable as too woody and so forth. So, you know, the Scotch people know what they're doing,
too. They know what they're doing. I want to say thanks to Susan Fortner in New Albany for your pledge of support. Susan relies on 89.7 NPR News every day, just like you do. If you're still listening, you know that this is the kind of programming I want to bring to you every single day. Interesting conversations with interesting people about really interesting and relevant things. Bourbon's bigger than ever. It's made only in the United States, and the only place you're going to get 89.7 NPR News is right here in Central Ohio. You may be listening in Florida, you may be listening in California, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C. I know people listen from all over the country, but you're only going to get that here. No matter where you're listening from, if you care about the kind of programming that we bring to you every day on 89.7 NPR News, every day on All Sides with Ann Fisher, I'm asking you to show your support for that right now. It's listener-supported 89.7 NPR News, and this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. And this morning we're talking bourbon, the drink that is prized around the world but distinctly American. Contribute $15 a month as a sustainer and get the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know, written by our guest today, Tim Barra. Your $15 a month gift can be withdrawn from your checking account or charged to your credit card. So go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We have 15 minutes left in the program. I'd like to see 10 more pledges this hour. I know we can do it. I know you're listening. You're interested in what we're talking about. I'm interested in what we're talking about. I'd rather be talking about that. But I also have an obligation to the station to make sure that you know how much we depend on your support. Bourbon has continued to grow as a spirit of choice by alcohol lovers across the globe. Many, though, have a limited understanding of how bourbon is made, and that's why Tim Bira wrote this book. After reading the book, you're going to be ready for a driving vacation on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. So get this great book and support public radio. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Your gift to 89.7 NPR News is essential to the future of the station. You know what's going on in Columbus thanks to award-winning local news coverage from the WOSU News Team. You hear in-depth, thoughtful discussion about our community on all sides. And all of this essential local news, news you can trust, it's only on the radio thanks to listener contributions. Do your part. Become a member. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Give what you can afford. Know that you'll be investing in your future listening by giving right now, though. Our thank you gift this hour is the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Dr. Tim Bira has developed this guidebook in a straightforward, easy-to-understand format, which we're going to talk about. He answers the question, what is bourbon, in a style both beginners and aficionados will appreciate. Get this great book now for $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180. Again, we're looking for 10 more pledges of support, 10 more members. Maybe you're going to re-up. Maybe you're a first-timer. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you can manage $5 a month, $15 a month, maybe $150 a month. Whatever you can manage, know that this is your time to show your support. The time has come. The numbers are 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and know that we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for letting us keep providing the kind of programming that you depend on every day. Thanks again to Susan Fortner in New Albany. Thanks to Nicholas Schroeder from Astoria, New York for your pledge. Nicholas, thank you so much for showing your support for 89.7 NPR News. People from around the country are listening right now. If you care about this, the continuance of this show, show your support at whatever level you can manage. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. And Tim Bira, you know, what did inspire you to write this book? You said you were writing a blog, right? Or
no, I don't.
Okay.
I don't do blogs. I don't even own a cell phone. I'm one of those guys.
That's right. You're one of those
I'm
guys.
I'm unusual. Yeah. But I got interested in learning more myself. So besides going to the Bourbon Trail, I took courses from Woodford Reserve's Bourbon Academy. And then there's this place in Louisville known as Moonshine University. And they offer a course and a credential. So I'm an executive bourbon steward. But you take courses and exams. The more I learned, the more I enjoyed it, you know. Knowing something enhances enjoyment. The more I enjoyed the bourbon, and I realized that, geez, every bourbon I had tastes a little different than every other bourbon. Why is that? And I started getting deeper and deeper and tasting more and more, and the outcome is I've got 175 bourbons in my library that's starting to displace my books. I can hardly walk around.
That's inconceivable.
Well, yeah. But so I started giving lectures. People would ask me, I gave talks on bourbon. And I kept getting these same questions over and over. There was so much misunderstanding about what is bourbon. Everybody who drinks it thinks they know something about it, and actually they don't know very much about it. So I thought, let me put it all in one place. One thing led to another, and I wanted to, I read 40 different books to write this, and I realized, well, geez, the world doesn't need another 250-page book about bourbon. What it needs is my PowerPoint presentation with pictures and bullet points.
Lots of pictures.
This idea to, can we make a book that is something like a PowerPoint, but yet is a proper-looking book? And the publisher, Acclaim Press out of Missouri, just did a gorgeous job of this. So
super
the front
nice.
Part of the book, You know, the left and right-hand page represents one slide of my PowerPoint, although in a book-like format. The back of the book is further explanations of what's on that. So you can quickly go through the front for Bourbon for Beginners, and then you can read the notes in the back as the advanced course to understand more deeply what those bullet points meant.
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm a bourbon man, but I was reading a book about scotch once, and they claimed that the hype about single barrel and all this kind of stuff was a lot of hype, that they had spent 100 years or longer learning how to blend it so you could come up with the ideal drink. Since any one barrel is liable to have a little too much of this or a little too little of that, blending got a bad name because it was a way to get rid of crummy stuff or a way of just diluting stuff with neutral grain spirits and the like. I wonder what you think if that's true on bourbon, that maybe some of the single barrel stuff where people will pay $1,000 for a bottle of bourbon is hype.
Yes. In a word, there's a lot of puffery on bourbon labels and a lot of overcharged imaginations about what you're saying. Whether a given individual could tell the difference between the regular bourbon of a particular brand and a single barrel bourbon with the same recipe and so forth, it started debatable. It really is a personal preference. And, you know, I went to an auction a couple of days ago. I mean, it's gotten so crazy that I stood in line for an hour and a half to get a ticket that would then be drawn for the privilege of buying this bourbon for $250. And my number didn't get called, and there were only 11 barrels.
Would
of
you
this.
Have bought it?
Well, I went there, so yes. Okay. I had to drive, you know, away from my house and so forth to get to this place. And I've done that on several occasions. I mean, the big hype is Pappy Van Winkle's. Everybody wants that. And, you know, on eBay, they're $3,000 a bottle for the 23-year-old.
Wow.
I actually went to a tasting where there were all six expressions of the Van Winkle products, and I paid a lot to do that. But my personal favorite in there was the 12-year-old, not the 23-year-old, not the 20, not the 50. I really thought the 12 was perfect. But that's just my taste. You know, there is no right answer to what's the best bourbon or, you know, what I taste is not going to be what you taste. Your taste buds are all different. Your experience is different. But I have kind of grown to know or to realize that you can actually taste certain things. I mean, the first time you taste butterscotch or vanilla or cinnamon or something, in a bourbon, it's sort of an aha moment because you read these descriptions from whiskey writers about what they taste. Oh, man, do they have imaginations? But occasionally, I actually get the same note. So, you know, it's an acquired skill, and the more you practice, the better you get.
Mike, thanks for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And it is listener-supported, 89.7 NPR News. Your support pays for the programs you listen to every day. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer and get the book, Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. We've been really lucky today to have Tim Barra, Ohio State professor emeritus, a prolific author on all different kinds of topics regarding something to do with biology usually. His newest book, though, is titled Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. And it's our thank you gift to you when you make $15 a month as a sustainer, or you, when you give us $15 a month as a sustainer, or a $180 one-time gift. If you're not a bourbon drinker, this book plus a public radio membership is the perfect gift for the bourbon lover in your life. And I'm also thinking a bottle of their favorite bourbon to go along with it might be kind of the gift of the century. Support all sides and get this great thank you gift for $15 a month. Go to WOSU.org. or call 866-897-9678. Your support pays for the programs you listen to every day. I know it's sometimes hard to imagine that it's that much of a straight line, but it really is, because it's you and all the other people who support 89.7 NPR News that makes this possible. Programs like All Sides and all of the other NPR programs, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Marketplace, The Daily, love The Daily. You depend on these programs. You trust the news and information on NPR and 89.7 NPR News. Support your source for the news of the day and analysis of long-term trends. And in return for your gift, we are offering you a great gift, the book Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Make a gift of $15 a month and get this book as your thank you gift today. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member. Become a member. Join the team. Join 89.7 NPR News. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Time is running out to support All Sides for this hour. You listen to the local news on 89.7 NPR News every day. You depend on the station to be your trusted news source locally and nationally. And we're asking you to support your source for news with a gift. We're dedicated to providing up-to-date, accurate information you can trust. We're dedicated to in-depth, thoughtful discussions that go beyond the headlines. Support your public radio station today. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. For $15 a month as a sustainer, you get Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Don't delay. Give right now while you're thinking about it. Give $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You know that more than anything, I want you to give what you can. I know that once you do give, once you become a member of 89.7 NPR News, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel a little more at peace when you listen to the pledge drives in the future, because you'll know that you're doing your part. There won't be that niggling, maybe that feeling of discomfort that you're not on the team yet. You're listening. You're kind of cheating. No, you're not cheating. We provide this on the airwaves free of charge. But we do need help to pay for it, and that's what we're asking you for right now. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Locally run and locally programmed, those two phrases have never been more relevant today when so much media is owned by large conglomerates. 89.7 NPR News exists to make sure that everyone in our corner of Ohio has access to vital news and information. Local Ohioans, local Central Ohioans are the people that are deciding what we cover, what makes the news, what we're talking about on All Sides with Dan Fisher. I want to thank my guest, Tim Bira. He's an Ohio State professor emeritus. He's been on the show several times before, and today he is talking about his newest book, Bourbon, What the Educated Drinker Should Know. Tim Bira, thank you so much for joining us today. It's really been a delight.
Well, thanks for having me, Ann, and I would encourage people in the Mansfield area to make this contribution, because we can't get 89.7. It's so poor of a signal. I can't even listen to myself when I'm on, you know?
But you can go online.
Yeah, well, I don't do much of that.
Well, that's right. Go online to 89.7 NPR News. You can go to WOSU.org. You can do that right now. It's listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus, and online at WOSU.org. It's a service of WOSU Public Media, 89.7 NPR News. We're global. We're local. And for those of you who have computers and have smartphones, you can download our app. You can listen to us online. That's how people listen to us all over the country now. We're locally run, locally programmed with locally focused programs like All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We address issues that impact our community at local, regional, and national levels. It's valuable radio, but it relies on your donations to keep it on the air. Please give now at WOSU.org or by phone at 866-897-9678. Remember, public radio is community radio. radio. That's why 89.7 NPR News brings you a show like this one. All Sides works hard to bring you shows every day that capture the news, the politics, and cultural interests of our unique region, including the culture of bourbon. Tell us this is programming that matters to you, that's important to your life. The numbers to call, 866-897-9678, or you can go online to WOSU.org. We value you, and we know you value us. Show us right now. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678, and thank you.